It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It was a mixed decision by the jury in the Jordan Miles civil suit, which led to mixed emotions by just about everyone involved, the lawyers, the police, and Mr. Miles, when the verdict was announced yesterday afternoon. In its split verdict, the 8-member, all-white jury of 4 men and 4 women awarded Jordan Miles more than $119,000 for a false arrest in 2010, but found against a claim of excessive force. The suit stemmed from an incident that occurred in 2010 when the then 18-year-old Mr. Miles was walking to his grandmother's house and was approached by 3 plain-clothed Pittsburgh police officers who ordered him to stop and forcefully restrained him when he refused. Miles was unarmed and had no previous criminal history. I'm joined now in Studio A by Pitt Law Professor David Harris, who managed a police community roundtable effort that grew out of the case. Dr. Harris, welcome, or I should say David Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be with you, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Explain the logic of this verdict. If the jury is saying that Jordan Miles was falsely arrested, then how can they say that there was no excessive force? If he was falsely arrested, then shouldn't any amount of force be considered excessive?
Well, not necessarily. And I grant you, on its face, this does seem to be difficult to understand. I see 2 possibilities. You look at the facts. The jury may have concluded that Mr. Miles was falsely arrested. When we say false arrest, what is required is that the person was arrested without probable cause, without any cause to believe that he was involved in an offense, and not at the beyond a reasonable doubt level, just at the probable cause, a lower level. And they believe that there was no probable cause for his arrest. Now, according to everybody, Mr. Miles and the police officers, once that happened, there was a struggle. And nobody disputes that there was a struggle. The circumstances of the struggle are in dispute, but there was a struggle. And the jury may have concluded that in those circumstances, the police officers reasonably felt that they were under some kind of attack or they had to defend themselves, and therefore the amount of force they used to do that was not excessive. The rules on this are pretty elastic. Police only have to be reasonable in the amount of force they use given the context. So while it's difficult to see on its face, the jury could have concluded, based on the facts they saw, that Mr. Miles was arrested without probable cause, but that once the scuffle began, the amount of force used to bring it to an end was reasonable. The other possibility is simply a compromise verdict. The police and the plaintiff, Mr. Miles, both advanced very different but very strong cases. The jury may have felt that the strongest case for Mr. Miles was on false arrest, the strongest case for the police on excessive force.
What evidence did the jury need to find for Jordan on false arrest, for the police on excessive force?
Well, on false arrest, what we look for is whether an arrest was conducted by law officers, which of course was true in both of those points, without probable cause. Probable cause is not the highest standard in the law, not by a long shot. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It isn't even more probable than not. It's something below that. You only need enough information that a reasonable police officer could believe that if an offense was taking place and that this person might have been involved in it. They don't have to be right in the end, just reasonable and in a prudent sort of way. So that's the amount of evidence that they would have taken for a good arrest. And what the jury seems to have concluded is that the police did not have even that level, probable cause level, of evidence to arrest. Now, on the excessive force point, again, the law is a little squishy here, but what the Supreme Court has said is that the police may only use an amount of force in any situation that is reasonable given the facts that they know and that they face.
Are the verdicts consistent? Again, if you are falsely arrested, if the jury is saying that there was no reason for this man to be detained, then again, how do you justify? I mean, we've seen the pictures.
Yes.
And regardless of how it happened, Jordan Miles was restrained. He was hit. And the face, the pictures of his face immediately after that incident 4 years ago show bruises, swelling. So if there was no cause to detain him in the first place, then how again do you explain the justification for what came next?
Well, and I think that's the question on everybody's minds. Jordan's own lawyers voiced the same set of questions, that they didn't really understand how it could be that the force was justified if the arrest was not. And I think that is difficult to understand, and especially in light of the pictures, which kind of really raised the level of visibility of this case right from the beginning. The pictures were very hard to look at, that young man. But again, I guess what I'd have to go back to is that the law requires that the amount of force be reasonable in the circumstances. Now, we know that the jury thought that the arrest itself was not legally justified, but something followed the arrest. We all see that. Jordan sees that. The police sees that. They all agree. And the amount of force that was used in that altercation, the jury is telling us, did not exceed what was reasonable.
And again, I would ask, wasn't the force based on the suspicion the officers had that Mr. Miles was armed, that he had an object that they thought was a gun? And if it's later proven that he had no gun and the Mountain Dew bottle that was supposedly what the police mistook for a gun,
Yes. It
that wasn't found either, or it wasn't entered into evidence. So again, if you have no evidence of the thing that they then justified the beating for, then how do you say that there was no excessive force?
Because the amount of force that is considered justified does not depend on what is found in the end.
I guess what I'm asking is, what justifies that?
Yeah, what justifies that is what the officers thought in the context in which they were. Okay, so if the jury believes, which it seems to have, that they thought, even if they were wrong, but they thought at the time that he had a gun and that this struggle was with an armed man, they turn out to be wrong. But if that's what they thought, and they thought so reasonably in that circumstance, they did not use too much force in the course of subduing him. Now, you still have the seeming contradiction, I grant you, between, you know, well, they didn't have to arrest him, they didn't have evidence to arrest him in the first place. But that is how the amount of force is considered and justified or not. It is not based on what they find in the end. It's based on what they knew and thought at the time. And if it would be reasonable to use that amount of force, then they didn't use excessive force.
Talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris. If you have a comment or question on yesterday's verdict in the Jordan Miles civil suit, if there's something about this case that confuses you, if the verdict leaves you, as it has others, confused, call us. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Lots of reaction to sample from yesterday's verdict, and we wanted to play a sound clip from attorney Brian Campbell. He represented one of the police officers who arrested Jordan Miles, Officer Salduti, and Brian Campbell seems as puzzled as the rest of us. Let's listen.
There wasn't anything developed during this trial that hadn't been developed before. The FBI investigated it. The matter went before a grand jury. The grand jury chose not to bring any charges. And the irony is, this even supports the fact, because if the grand jury was going to do anything, it would have been because the officers used excessive force.
The attorneys for the police officers say they're disappointed that the verdict was was just the result of the jury showing sympathy for Jordan Miles. So explain why they're disappointed and talk about what we just heard from Brian Campbell there.
Well, they're disappointed because they made the case from the beginning, both in public and in the courtroom, that everything that the officers did was absolutely legal and justified. And the jury disagreed. And so they are disappointed that they did not get the verdict that they wanted. You know, that's the first thing. The second thing is the gentleman in the clip talks about how the grand jury viewed it. There was an FBI investigation and so forth. Keep in mind that those pieces of investigation, those were all targeted at whether or not to bring criminal charges against the officers. And the standard for criminal charges is much higher than in a case like this. This was
the
civil
burden
suit.
Was on the plaintiff, Jordan Miles, to prove that these officers actually, in fact, broke a law.
Not only that, the burden was on Mr. Miles to prove his case, but only by a preponderance of the evidence, more than 50% of the evidence. If the case had gone to the grand jury and been prosecuted as a crime, not as a civil suit, not as a lawsuit, but a crime, the burden would be on the government, in this case the federal government, to prove all the elements of the case beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest standard we have in the law. So it would have taken much more evidence. Beyond that, they would also have had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the officers had the intention of violating the Constitution. That is a very difficult burden. So it's no surprise in a way that the grand jury might not have indicted. But it has nothing to do actually with the verdict in this case. Now, when he says it was a verdict based on sympathy, I saw that quote in the paper as well.
Right. Is that correct to say?
I'm not buying that, and I'll tell you why. It's easy to toss around a word like it's just sympathy for Mr. Miles. The jury wasn't basing it on any facts. In other words, they were just basing it on emotion. But it's just as plausible to say that the verdict in favor of the police officers was based on some kind of sympathy or emotion too. So I would prefer to think that this is a fact-based verdict by the jury. My experience trying jury trial cases was that juries try very hard to do what we ask them to do, which is to look at the facts and make the best judgment that they can, and they try to keep sympathy out of it.
The damages in this case awarded Jordan Miles more than $119,000 for a false arrest in 2010. How did they arrive at these figures?
Well, that you have actual damages, such as medical bills and things like that, and then the jury is entitled to add to that the compensation for direct damages, such as pain and suffering or whatever. The difference is between compensatory damages, which compensate for losses, and punitive damages, which are a penalty and meant to send the message, don't do this, to both the people here and the people who are watching. Most of this was compensatory damages.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Again, 412-246-2002. Let's go to Kevin in Pittsburgh, who is a retired state trooper. Kevin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Pitt Law Professor David Harris.
Hi, Professor. Could you address the use of force continuum? And if those police officers actually did think that they were being faced with a gun, why didn't they shoot that young man? So I have a real problem with, okay, you had this bottle that we thought was a gun, and you're gonna go hand to hand with somebody in a situation like that as opposed to shooting him. I'll listen to you off the air.
Well, it's a very interesting question, and thank goodness they didn't shoot him. But to Kevin's point, what about this continuum?
Yes, it's a great question, Kevin, and I have to start off by agreeing with what you said, Paul. It is a blessing to Jordan and everybody else that he is still with us and didn't get shot. What Kevin is referring to is the continuum of force, and the continuum of force is widely used in police training all over the United States to describe the way we have to think of what is reasonable force in any given situation. We think not of a force as discrete blocks, like here's hand-to-hand combat and here's shooting, and here's taser and so forth, but as a continuum. And the officer who is involved in an altercation adjusts the use of force that he or she uses dependent upon the facts faced. And Kevin is making an excellent point. He's saying if they thought they were faced with deadly force, they're actually entitled on the continuum of force to use deadly force to protect themselves and others around them. And he wonders why, if they thought that they were facing deadly force in the form of a gun, they did not try to do the same thing. And I think in his mind, what that means is that maybe the officers were not faced with that sort of deadly force. They didn't actually think that because to not use the right amount of force, if you were actually facing a gun, put yourself in danger. And that's how officers are trained. So it's a very interesting question, quite intriguing.
Thank you, Kevin. Let's go to Bob in Allison Park. Bob, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. Just a couple observations, and maybe there's a question implied here. I've worked in mental health for parts of four decades in the Pittsburgh area. I was a trainer in therapeutic crisis intervention and on a daily basis was faced with enraged children and teenagers at various times. And in all of my experience, whenever physical intervention as opposed to verbal intervention occurred, in other words, whether a physical restraint was instituted, I can't recall any injury beyond an abrasion on a cheek or maybe like if it was on concrete, a bloody elbow or a knee. And so when I hear about these three officers who clearly were very fit and able specimens taking on a 16 or 17-year-old.
18.
And 18. An 18-year-old. And by the way, some of the children I've intervened with were the size of Steeler linemen. And this also brings to mind the Johnny Gamage case, which happened to occur right when I was dealing with a child of that size. It seems to me just implausible to understand how, and I certainly wouldn't pass judgment on them because they were there and I wasn't, but that with all of the tools at their disposal, three of them, large adult men, physically fit, both with verbal skills and physical skills, that Jordan Miles could look the way he looked after his interaction with police without excessive use of force.
Well, and thank you. That's a good point that you bring up, Bob. Jordan Miles claims that he was beaten after he was handcuffed. The officers say that the bruises on his face occurred because he was tackled, I believe, in some bushes, and that his face was marked or looked the way it did because of that. With those things in mind, David, what about Bob's point here?
I think it's an interesting point that Bob makes here. The idea that that it took so much force to subdue Jordan that it yielded the injuries that we saw in those photographs. But again, I wouldn't take anything away from the jury here. The jury heard the facts and concluded that whatever happened was within the realm of being produced by reasonable force. And I think if you're, you know, if you're persuaded by one part of what the jury decided, you have to believe in the other part of it too. We have to remember, I think, that everybody concedes here, Jordan Miles and the officers, that there was quite a struggle. I have met Jordan Miles myself. He is a small person. He is about 5'6" tall. And at the time of this altercation, he weighed some, I think, between 130 and 140 pounds. It does seem like it was quite a mismatch. But if you remember his testimony, he thought that his life was being threatened. And in that circumstance, he might struggle a lot. So I don't think it's implausible, but I agree there are reasons to think about it hard.
Let's go to Amy in Pittsburgh. Amy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with David Harris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if you could discuss what measures are in place to deter police officers from saying that, from falsely saying that they thought somebody had a gun in order to use excessive force.
This, I think, if I get your question right, Amy, the idea is there anything that stops police officers from saying that somebody had a gun as a way of justifying after the fact?
And let's,
or even in order to use excessive
or
force.
Or even okay, that's a. I understand your question. It's a good question, and you know, ultimately, we have to rely on our police officers to tell the truth. There is nothing that we could do at the time that this all happened to have a definitive version. The one thing that I would say is more and more police departments across the country are considering the use of so-called helmet cams, head cams, lapel cams. These are small cameras that mount on a police officer's uniform or equipment. They are to be turned down on whenever there's an encounter between a police officer and a citizen. And this could have given us some kind of definitive record of what happened here. We wouldn't have to guess, for instance, whether the police officers announced themselves properly, as they said they did, or whether they did not, as Jordan says. The latest use of these cameras, you may have seen, or some of the listeners may have seen, in a video that has been circulating of police in Albuquerque, New Mexico, shooting a homeless man. This was done with a helmet cam, and then it turns out there's a lapel cam too, but that video has not been released. So I think maybe some of these technological improvements can be part of what can guarantee that we all know what the real story is.
We're talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris about the verdict announced in the Jordan Miles civil suit yesterday afternoon. The jury awarded Jordan Miles more than $119,000 for a false arrest in 2010, but found against a claim of excessive force. There was a settlement offer before the first trial for $180,000, which is more than the eventual verdict. What effect will that have, David?
This is a good question, Paul, and it's very complicated. Here's the layout. This is a civil rights suit, and with many civil rights lawsuits, the actual damages the amount of those damages don't justify all of the legal expense it takes to take on a police department or police officers over the course of 4 years. So there is a federal law that says when you prevail in a federal civil rights lawsuit, when you win, your attorney's fees get paid by the losing side. And that's been the law for a long, long time. And what it does is it empowers private attorneys to take these cases even if they would not be economically viable. Why do we want that? Because we want federal civil rights to be vindicated. This was a judgment of Congress. 20 years ago, the Supreme Court basically flipped this around and said, look, if the defendants make a settlement offer and a verdict comes in, the plaintiff wins, but it does not win by as much as or more than the amount of the settlement offer, the attorneys are not going to get their fees. So what's going to have to be decided here is whether or not those lawyers will be paid and out of what money.
We'll get to another call or two here in a moment. I wanted to play another sound clip. Here is how Jordan Miles' attorney, Joel Sansone, reacted to the verdict.
You realize that a six-figure verdict, while it may not seem much to some, is a lot of money. And it's a lot of money for people to award against police officers who said they didn't do anything wrong. So while I can't explain how they arrived at the conclusion that this wasn't excessive force, I'm still hopeful that the message gets through.
And Mr. Sansone has also asked that U.S. Attorney David Hickton reopen the federal criminal investigation of the officers, which was closed without charges being filed in 2011. Would a federal prosecutor reopen a criminal probe because of a civil verdict?
I think it's extremely unlikely because the amount of evidence it takes to win in a federal civil case is much less than it would take to prove a federal criminal case. So I don't see that happening. As far as his other point that he made, that this is a lot of money and so forth, I think that's legitimate. I mean, it's not often that these cases are won against police officers. It takes a real good case to win even a partial verdict against police officers because we as a society want to believe police officers. We want them to have the benefit of the doubt. So I think it is a significant victory, and it's never been about the money for that family anyway.
Let's go to Joe from Robinson Township. Hi, Joe. Welcome to Essential Hi. Pittsburgh.
Hi. I just have a couple simple questions. Could you define exactly what is considered too much force and where is the dividing line?
Okay.
Good questions.
Yes. And they are the $64,000 question right now. The simple answer, Joe, is that there is no dividing line, no bright line that you will ever find in the law. What the Supreme Court has said is that that police officers can use an amount of force that is reasonable under the circumstances that they are aware of in order to bring the situation under control. And that has been defined in a lot of different ways. There are certain things we know police can't do. They can't shoot somebody in the back to apprehend them when it's not a dangerous felony. But we know that there are plenty of things they can do in terms of using force. We use that continuum that we spoke about. So there's never a clear dividing line. What we have is a reasonableness test that is by definition up to the jury.
one last quick call from Caleb in Pittsburgh. Caleb, we're running out of time, so if you can make it quick, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes.
Quickly, I guess mine is a general police. As you noted earlier, I think, in the week, that two of the officers were trained in martial arts, and that three larger men against one small threat, as you can call it. Why, in martial arts training, as I am trained myself, we're trained to disarm without striking? And why continually in the media we see officers overusing force, constantly striking the felons or threats?
Good question, Caleb. What about the overuse of force, David?
Well, the overuse of force in general is something I think we need to think about and officers need to be trained in. And as far as I know, in our county at least, they are trained. As far as these officers having martial arts training, they did have that, as far as I knew, at least two of them. But they had other varieties of training too. And we can't know which of those pieces of training was in their minds and part of their actions on that day.
Last question for you. The Jordan Miles case has been a flashpoint between the Pittsburgh police and the African-American community. Mayor Peduto, among others, said after the verdict that he wants to move on and put this behind us so the city can heal. With yesterday's verdict, what will happen, do you think?
Well, you know, this is not going to satisfy anybody, this verdict. The police seem very disappointed that they didn't get the complete vindication they thought they were entitled to. And while Mr. Miles and his attorney have claimed victory, clearly they didn't get everything they thought that they would get, they could get either. So this is not going to be as easy to put behind us, I think, as everybody hopes. I certainly hope we can, and I hope we can begin to work together, because the fundamental here is that police and communities have to be on the same page. Public safety is hard to produce when you don't trust each other. And that's one of the things that the Jordan Miles case made worse. So we have to work back towards trusting each other and working together so we can all have the kind of community and city that we want.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. David, as always, great thanks.
You're welcome, Paul. Good to be with you.
Coming up, we'll talk with Cecilia Peck, director of the documentary Brave New World. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90 Brave Miss World. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.